So, is Barack Obama making a comeback in the American presidential race? According to surveys taken after last night's head-to-head debate, the town hall debate, so-called, that certainly seems to be the case. With me now, we have on the line from America, historian Richard Aulis, and in studio, Samuel Braces of the School of International Relations at UCD. Good morning to you both. Richard, thank you for rising early to talk to us in the United States. First of all, was your impression of the debate? Was there a clear winner?
Good morning, Pat. I think the first thing that I would say is that it really was a fantastic debate. It's one of the best that I've ever seen. That, you know, there was an amazing amount of detail in the debate, and it was really feisty. Very often these staged occasions can be a bit of a letdown. This was not one of those. These two men really were going at each other, hammer and tong. As you said before, the polls, the kind of instant polls afterwards, have pretty much said that Barack Obama won the debate. I think that it probably would have been a draw if it hadn't been for this moment on Libya. We know that debates are about moments. They're not about the whole hour and a half. And that moment over Libya was a turning point for Barack Obama.
Okay, let's have a listen to it, and then we can parse it a little bit more.
The day after the attack, Governor, I stood in the Rose Garden, and I told the American people and the world that we were going to find out exactly what happened, that this was an act of terror. And I also said that we're going to hunt down those who committed this crime. And then a few days later, I was there greeting the caskets coming into Andrews Air Force Base and grieving with the families. And the suggestion that anybody in my team, whether the Secretary of State, our UN ambassador, anybody on my team would play politics or mislead when we've lost four of our own, Governor, is offensive. That's not what we do. That's not what I do as president. That's not what I do as commander-in-chief.
Governor, if you want to reply quickly to this, please.
I think it's interesting. The president just said something, which is that on the day after the attack, he went to the Rose Garden and said that this was an act of terror.
That's what I said.
You said in the Rose Garden, the day after the attack, it was an act of terror. It was not a spontaneous demonstration. Is that what you're saying?
Please proceed, Governor.
I want to make sure we get that for the record, because it took the president 14 days before he called the attack in Benghazi an act of terror.
Get the transcript.
He did, in fact, sir. So let me call it an act of
terror. Can you say that a little louder, Candy?
He did call it an act of terror. It did as well.
Okay, Richard, so why is that so important?
Well, I think it's important because it's a gotcha moment, isn't it? That, I mean, actually, as Candy Crowley goes on to make about 30 seconds after that clip, the point that she makes is that on the broader issue that Governor Romney was making, there has been concern in the United States about the way in which the administration reacted. But on the specific point, in the Rose Garden, Barack Obama used the phrase, "No acts of terror will ever shake the resolve of this great nation." So when Romney called him out on it, he was able to say, look at the transcript, and then the moderator was able to say, look, there it is, I'm afraid you're wrong.
Samuel.
Well, thank you, Pat. It's good to be on, and Richard, hello to you. I agree absolutely that that moment was a crucial moment in the debate, but, you know, I would say that really, you know, and a lot of commentators have noticed this, that Candy Crowley really overstepped her bounds as the moderator of the debate at that point. You know, and if you look back at the transcript of that speech in the Rose Garden, yes, he does say acts of terror, but he says it much later after referring to the Benghazi attack, and it appears that he's really, you know, referencing general acts of terror as a speech being given to sort of commemorate a 9/11
Do you both
event.
Think that Candy was on her best behavior, in a sense, because the moderator in the first one was criticized for allowing facts to go unchecked?
I mean, she was certainly combative, and I think that contributed to the overall combative nature of what the town hall debate, which is usually a very sort of friendly debate format. But, you know, I think that, you know, There are things this morning that shows that, you know, Barack Obama was given 3 minutes more time. You know, the contractual obligation that both parties agreed to ahead of time that, you know, the moderator would essentially pose the questions and you know, facilitate the debate. You know, not only did she say that she was going to deviate from that ahead of the debate, I think in particular with this Libya instance, she went far beyond that and really influenced the debate.
I want to play a clip which indicates how quickly they engaged with each other.
Governor Romney doesn't have a 5-point plan. He has a 1-point plan. And that plan is to make sure that folks at the top play by a different set of rules.
This has been a disappointment. We can do better than this. We don't have to settle for how many months? 43 months with unemployment above 8%.
So, Richard, that was very near the beginning, and they really set to with a will after that.
They did, and you know, I think that particularly the sense of here were two candidates who, certainly in the early part of the debate, really were on the top of their game, came across. The president was being criticised in the first debate really for not turning up. That was not the case here. And essentially, you know, the two clips that you played there, I think, encapsulate what they each were trying to say, that Romney kept hammering away about this point that there are 23 million who are out of work, that he had a great quote, that the president was a great speaker with a poor record. And on the other hand, President Obama kept saying, well, you know, show us your plan. This is a sketchy plan. And, you know, he had a very good moment where, he said to Governor Romney, well, if you're a businessman, if I can't...
Okay, I have that clip. Let's hear it, Richard. Yeah.
Governor Romney was a very successful investor. If somebody came to you, Governor, with a plan that said, here, I want to spend $7 or $8 trillion, and we're going to pay for it, but we can't tell you until maybe after the election how we're going to do it, you wouldn't have taken such a sketchy deal. And neither should you, the American people.
Samuel, that's a pretty telling point.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, Romney has faced a significant amount of criticism for, you know, this tax plan and do the numbers add up. And there have been a number of different tax policy studies that suggest maybe they don't. And the president has been keen and has made a lot of mileage by hammering that point home. You know, I think Romney in the first debate, you know, addressed this issue to some extent, you know, by saying that, you know, in a very pragmatic way, that he can't really give all the details because that's something that obviously comes as part of the legislative process. But, you know, this is certainly the president's message, along with the fact that he wants to continue to show that Romney is out of touch with Americans. You know, and I think that both Romney and the president, you know, really did a good job of pressing home their talking points.
Richard, on that point, the $7 trillion point...
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that exactly as Samuel has said there, I mean, you know, his analysis is spot on. I think that, you know, the president has been trying to push home this idea of, you know, a secret plan, that these things aren't sketched out, that, you know, that Governor Romney would be making all kinds of cuts that he's just not prepared to tell us about. On the other hand, you know, the comeback from Governor Romney is always, well, you know, look, you make great speeches, but we're talking about your record. And so time and again, he kept coming back to this idea that, you know, about unemployment and about leases for energy resources on federal land and this kind of thing. It was constantly the president trying to say, what are you going to do? And Romney coming back and saying, well, look, we're judging you on your record.
And Romney had a go at the president for almost bringing America down the road that Greece has been on.
He said when he was running for office, he would cut the deficit in half. Instead, he's doubled it. We've gone from $10 trillion of national debt to $16 trillion of national debt. If the president were reelected, we go to almost $20 trillion of national debt. This puts us on a road to Greece.
A road to Greece, Samuel.
Yeah, I think in the first debate he said a road to Spain, so I'm sure it's just a matter of time before Ireland gets in there. You know, but this is obviously the Romney strategy. You know, if he's going to win, he's going to win on the economy. He's going to win on the budget deficit. You know, and clearly the president has a very difficult time defending his record here.
There was quite a neat little exchange, though, on pensions. Very short. Have a listen.
Mr. President, have you looked at your pension?
You know, I don't look at my pension. It's not as big as yours, so it doesn't take as long.
Let me give you some.
And that got a laugh, as you can imagine. We want to listen to some of the remarks on closing. And first, this is Romney using his religion to pretty good effect.
I care about 100% of the American people. I want 100% of the American people to have a bright and prosperous future. I care about our kids. I understand what it takes to make a bright and prosperous future for America again. I spent my life in the private sector, not in government. I'm a guy who wants to help with the experience I have the American people. My passion probably flows from the fact that I believe in God. And I believe we're all children of the same God. I believe we have a responsibility to care for one another. I served as a missionary for my church. I served as a pastor in my congregation for about 10 years. I've sat across the table from people who were out of work and worked with them to try and find new work or to help them through tough times.
And that religion question, Samuel, is it to the forefront of American voter thinking at all?
You know, I think that was probably the most sincere moment of the debate. But I'm not sure how much that necessarily helps Romney with the undecided voter at this point. Certainly that speaks to his constituent base, a large part of which would have deeply held religious beliefs. But, you know, I think it was actually in many ways sort of a bold and courageous move of the president. Since there are some – there has been, I guess, skepticism about a Mormon faith and having a Mormon president, to sort of invoke that directly, you know, shows that he's comfortable with that and believes that doesn't hurt him.
Richard?
Yeah, I'll be interested to see in all the post-debate analysis and once we hear from various players whether that was something that he'd intended to do. Because after the Libya exchange, which we talked about earlier, Romney, it really knocked him back. And it was almost as if, you know, he realized that he needed to retreat to things that he really deeply believed in. And, you know, as Samuel said, it did come across as a very sincere, a very open and a very honest moment. And it enabled him to kind of recover his poise at the end of the debate. So, you know, I think that, you know, it was something that hasn't really been talked about very much. Obviously his advisors have been telling him, look, we don't want to bring up this issue. But at that moment, right at the end, he was able to use it to address as well this important point about the 47%. You know, the common
and we'll listen to that now.
I believe Governor Romney is a good man. Loves his family, cares about his faith. But I also believe that when he said behind closed doors that 47% of the country considered themselves victims who refused personal responsibility, think about who he was talking about. Folks on Social Security who've worked all their lives. Veterans who've sacrificed for this country. Students who are out there trying to hopefully advance their own dreams, but also this country's dreams. Soldiers who are overseas fighting for us right now. People who are working hard every day, paying payroll tax, gas taxes, but don't make enough income. And I want to fight for them.
Timing is everything, Samuel. That was a good time to bring that up, wasn't it?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, we all knew it was a matter of when and not if the 47% issue was going to come up. And as has been noted in many places, by waiting until he had the last word, you know, the president was able to make that point without giving Romney a chance to rebut.
Yeah, Richard, that timing of the interjection on 47% was crucial.
Yeah, and there's, again, as Samuel says, I mean, it was obviously a strategy because, you know, the social media like Twitter was going ballistic saying, what, no 47%? Why isn't the president hammering away on this? And it was clear that he wanted to leave it as his kind of his last big punch at the end of the fight.
I don't know how much analysis there will be of this. Eamon in Terranure says, I watched the full debate live, as will undoubtedly become obvious over the next few days. The media has twisted the piece about Obama calling Benghazi an act of terror in the debate. The question Romney was asking, and Obama would not answer, was why did Obama say he called it an act of terror the day after the ambassador was assassinated, but then took up to 3 weeks claiming it was a riot because of the Muhammad film, which was embarrassing to the United States.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a huge point. And this is a point it'll be interesting to see, because it's such a delicate issue, what the Romney campaign does with this. But, you know, I mean, 5 days afterwards, Susan Rice, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, is going on the Sunday morning talk shows and clearly saying that, you know, we think this was a spontaneous event. So that has been the line from the administration. And even as, you know, now 3 weeks later, they're backing off a little bit, they're still saying that it was the video and not necessarily a premeditated terrorist attack.
Okay. And you, Richard?
Yeah, I think the problem is that that it was a good debating point, and there's a difference between something being right and it being a good debating point, as any member of the LNH will know. That and that was the moment that Mitt Romney was discomforted on the night at the moment.
All right. Now, finally,
that was significant.
It's one each, so it sets it up nicely for the third, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Richard first.
It really does. I mean, I think that, what we thought was going to be a fairly lame election with the president, looking as if he was going to kind of pretty much sleepwalk to victory. The first debate changed that. The second debate really makes it a very tight race and very, very exciting.
Yes, the third debate's good.
I should just say as well, Pat, that, sometimes we say, politics, people aren't interested, that it's dead, there's no proper debate. The debate last night really was a superb advert.
It was certainly a yes minister type of debate, which Americans probably aren't used to. But I think absolutely, the third debate and the October jobs numbers are going to be the deciders in this election.
All right, we leave it there. Samuel, thank you very much. And Richard, thank you.